Welcome back to Insights Now. My name is Mary Park Durham, and I'm a research associate on the Market Insights Strategy team here at JP Morgan Asset Management. I'll be your host for this episode, and similar to last week's episode, David Kelly will be the interviewee. Going into 2023, almost everyone was predicting a recession within the next 12 months. However, what we saw was quite the opposite. The U.S. economy grew at a 2.5% year-over-year pace, and the unemployment rate stayed below 4%. This positive momentum has continued into this year, although the economy is gradually cooling. This robust economic performance has been puzzling because many of the typical recession indicators have been flashing red for a while. The U.S. had two consecutive quarters of negative growth in 2022, the yield curve remains inverted, and credit markets are notably tighter. Despite these warning signs, the U.S. economy has managed to stave off a recession and appears resilient to higher interest rates. This raises the question, how long can the U.S. continue to avoid a recession, and if one were to occur, what would likely trigger it? To help us dive deeper into this question, I'm excited to be interviewing the show's host, Dr. David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist for JP Morgan Asset Management. Before we begin, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning in to the JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked in the show notes. We have a lot to talk about, so let's get started. David, welcome back to the guest seat on Insights Now.
Glad to be here.
So for our first question, I think we should start with the basics. What is the definition of a recession and how do we know if we're in one?
Well, it's actually a little bit more complicated than people think. I think a lot of people have heard that a recession is two negative quarters of GDP, but that's actually not stated anywhere, and I don't think it's very accurate. So there's an organization called the National Bureau of Economic Research, which has been around for more than a century, and they get to define recessions. And they define a recession as a broad decline in economic activity, which lasts more than a few months, which is visible across the whole country, and which shows up in real retail and wholesale sales, in real consumer spending, in personal income, in industrial production, in employment as measured by the household survey, and employment as measured by the payroll survey. And so when they see this broad decline in these indicators, they say we're in a recession. And I think that's a reasonable definition. It's not very intuitive, but as an economist, it sort of makes sense. It does mean that we're in a recession, but it also means that it's quite difficult to predict one beforehand or see one immediately it's occurring. You sort of figure it out over the course of at least a few weeks and perhaps a few months that, okay, now we are in recession.
Great, thank you. And David, you frequently mention that you get the soft landing or hard landing question. You often respond by saying there's always another quarter. What do you mean by this, and what sectors of the economy do you see as vulnerable right now?
The way people ask me the question is, are we going to have a soft landing or are we going to have a recession? And that's not, eventually we're going to have a recession because eventually your luck runs out. And I think that's really what I mean. Every quarter that we go with the economy growing at a 2% pace roughly, with inflation fairly steady or coming down, I regard that as a soft landing. And so in a way, we've been in a soft landing for probably the best part of 2 years or longer at this stage, with the economy just moving forward. So there is always another quarter, and eventually we'll have a recession. But I will say that the things that I worry about now are not so much, okay, what are interest rates going to do to the economy, or what's the Fed's attempt to get inflation down going to do to the economy? We're sort of past that cyclical problem. There are things to worry about. I think we do worry about some parts of real estate and how that might be affecting the banking industry. I worry a little bit about perhaps the stock market getting too high and then falling sharply, which could change business sentiment. Or it could be something else entirely. I mean, if you think about the history of the 21st century so far, the things that have put us into recession or caused huge market turmoil are really things you couldn't have predicted beforehand, things like 9/11 or Lehman Brothers pulling down the global financial system or the pandemic. So eventually we're going to get, this fate sort of stands there with a baseball bat behind his back, and eventually he's going to thump us on the head. We just don't know when. So there are things I worry about, but the thing I mostly worry about are things that we aren't thinking about that will eventually cause a recession.
That makes sense. The typical recession indicators, like the yield curve and the Conference Board's leading economic index, have been flashing red for so long that we've kind of begun to ignore them. And why have these failed to correctly predict a recession, and are there new or more reliable indicators that we should be following?
Well, I think both of them have got their problems. So first of all, the Index of Leading Economic Indicators, you know, originally that was run by the government many, many years ago, and then they farmed it out to the Conference Board. The problem is it was originally built as something for a much more manufacturing-intensive economy. And so as the economies become more service-oriented, this focus on manufacturing, I think, is unwarranted. And there's also actually some things about the construction of this index, which I think the Conference Board are just getting wrong, which are leading to a negative bias of the whole thing. So, yes, it's pretty much a useless indicator. Mm-hmm. Honestly, they should scrap it. But it's what people have traditionally looked to as an indicator of recession. And then the yield curve, the thing about the yield curve is, a downwardly sloping yield curve used to be a very good predictor of recession. And the reason is pretty simple. Why would you have a downwardly sloping yield curve? Well, it's because people expect the Federal Reserve to cut short-term interest rates. That's the only reason why you'd buy a long-term bond with a lower yield than a short-term bond, because you thought you're going to get a capital gain when long-term interest rates come down. Why are you going to get long-term interest rates going to come down? Because we go into recession or because the Fed's cutting rates. And why would the Fed cut rates? Because we're heading for a recession. So a downwardly sloping yield curve had been a good predictor in the past. But what's happened now is the economy is not very sensitive to short-term interest rates at all. So when the Fed raises rates, it hasn't slowed the economy down. What's more, the Federal Reserve is expected to reduce rates somewhat, and that means that long-term yields can be lower than short-term yields, but it's not really a predictor of recession. So there honestly is there's no such thing as a no-brainer when it comes to predicting recessions at this stage. You have to look at all the indicators. And so what we do is we look at a macroeconomic model of the U.S. economy, look at all the pieces, and we just sort of feed it out quarter by quarter and say, okay, is there anything here big enough in terms of what's going on in the economy that could actually push this whole thing negative? And at the moment, that's not where we are. But you have to have a very flexible, pragmatic approach to predicting recessions right now, because the old indicators just don't work very well.
Mm-hmm. And there's no single indicator that can correctly.
That's right. You got to watch the whole thing.
Yes. The word recession is very intimidating for obvious reasons. I would say it's perhaps even more intimidating because of what you mentioned, because the past few crises, including COVID and the Great Financial Crisis, were two of the worst in U.S. economic history. So barring unforeseen events, the next recession in the U.S. likely won't be as severe. So if a recession were to materialize at some point, what kind of recession do you think it would be? And how high could the employment rate potentially go? And what would it mean for growth?
Yeah. So the opening line of Anna Karenina, mm-hmm. Or the opening lines are that all happy families are happy in the same way, but all unhappy families are unhappy in a unique way. And I kind of feel like that about recessions. You know, when you've got a growing economy, it's kind of all the same. But when you have a recession, they all seem to be caused by different things. And you're quite right. I mean, people from the millennial generation or the Gen Z generation, you think about recessions, you think about the pandemic recession, massive recession, or the great financial crisis, earth-shattering recession. But a more typical recession is what happened, say, in 1990, where the economy, you know, slips into a mild recession for a quarter or two, the unemployment rate goes up. Back then, it went up to about 7.5%, so it did get higher. This time around, if we sort of slipped into recession, it's kind of hard to just slip into recession. But if it's not some huge shock, if it's just sort of a pullback in AI spending or something that causes the economy to dip negative, mm-hmm. I don't think the unemployment rate would go up much. Because we actually are pretty constrained in terms of labor supply. The working-age population, at least native-born working-age population, isn't growing at all. Mm-hmm. And there is still, at this stage, over 8 million job openings. So I think you would see the unemployment rate move up a little bit in a mild recession, but not to the levels of previous recessions. So I think it's possible that you could have a recession with the unemployment rate going up to, say, 5%, 5.5%, maybe 6% tops. That kind of recession could emerge, I suppose, unless there's some very big shock.
That makes sense. And my last question is about how to invest when economic momentum is gradually slowing and when economic momentum goes in reverse, aka recession. Obviously, there are not many places to hide, but how can investors prepare while sticking to their investment plans?
Well, I think there are a few things. I mean, first of all, that's why you have bonds in a portfolio to start with, because generally speaking, the stock market does not like recessions. And mm-hmm. so you can easily see a situation, and we saw this in 2000, we saw this in 2008, where the stock market falls very sharply because, in coincident with the recession. So, but usually the bond market will rally because people then expect, okay, you're going to get much more aggressive Fed rate cuts. So that's part of the story. Mm. I think we have to be careful with that one now, though, because rates aren't that high. Long-term rates aren't that high. And also the government's borrowing a lot of money. And I wonder how much, you know, we're at 4.25%, say, on a 10-year treasury right now, roughly. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much that would fall. And so if we had a recession, maybe 3.25%, 3.5%. So you get some capital gain, but it wouldn't offset all the equity market losses. So part of the answer is having some money in fixed income. But I think a better answer is two things. One, watch valuations in your portfolio. The stuff that goes up the most will come down the most. It's sort of Newton's law. And so there are things, and we all, I'm not going to name names here, but we all know what areas of markets are very inflated in terms of pricing right now. Do everything you can to avoid jumping on that bandwagon late. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is just be diversified. As I said, a recession could occur for many different reasons. All recessions are different. If you are hedging a portfolio, that means you are looking at a particular risk. This is the thing that I'm worried about, and this is why I'm going to buy this asset to hedge against it. But if you don't know which way where the next problem is coming from, you don't know what direction it's coming from, you really just need to be diversified. And I think that means stocks as well as bonds. It means small cap as well as large cap. It means international as well as domestic. And it means alternatives. I think a lot of people need to have a much more diversified portfolio to protect them against recessions that could come from that could be triggered by a lot of different things. So I think it's valuations and also just being very broadly diversified is the best way to approach this. And don't wait till the last minute also, because you know, you don't want to do a lot of rebalancing and have to pay in short order and have to pay the tax man a lot of money. So you need to have a plan to constantly sort of get back to as much balance as possible while minimizing the tax exposure. And that's, of course, another reason to think about tax smart investing.
Definitely. And active management. I think if you invest passively, you're investing in indices that are already very concentrated.
Absolutely. So. I mean, that's the problem with indices. You know, they're capital weighted. And so all the hype and euphoria and frenzy shows up in these indices with huge weights. And we've never seen as big a weight in the top, say, 10 companies in the S&P 500 as we're seeing right now.
Definitely. So I think that's all the time we have for today. David, thank you very much for sharing your insights. On our next episode, join David for a discussion on whether or not inflation can get back to 2%. Until then, check out David's Notes on the Week Ahead podcast, where every Monday he shares commentary on the latest in the markets and the economy to help you stay informed. For even more timely insights, you can follow and subscribe to David's content on LinkedIn. And to all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today, and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.